Hope you're doing well. My name is Brian. If I haven't gotten a chance to meet you, a pastor here, and ready to talk to you today. So hope that you're doing well. Had good service so far worshiping. I want to talk to you today about a stronghold that has been present in my life, and I think this is a stronghold that has probably to some extent or another been present in your life as well. I want to talk to you today about fear. Somebody has defined fear as false evidence that appears real. You get it? F-E-A-R, false evidence that appears real. I didn't want you to catch that at lunch later when you were thinking about it, but false evidence that appears real. That definition of fear would have fit me really well when I was about 4 or 5 years old. I was staying with my great-grandparents, and I called my grandma my big granny for obvious reasons. Anyway, she was my big granny, and I had a little granny, big granny. Anyway, so staying with them one night, and I laid down and I was sleeping in the same bed as she was, and I'm not exactly sure of all the details, but I do know this. This is one of the most vivid memories I have of my childhood, like 4 years old. I was lying there in bed, and I don't know if I was awakened from this sound or I was just lying there and trying to go to sleep and I heard this sound, but I heard this kind of ominous, deep sort of growl noise that started rumbling, you know, and I'm just like, I don't know if I had just watched Little Red Riding Hood or what, but immediately in my mind, like 4 or 5 years old, I interpret the growl to be what? I mean, if it's growl, obviously it's a wolf that's hiding under the bed. And so I start in my mind, you know, fixating on this, there's a wolf under the bed, there's a wolf under the bed. And before you know it, I was convinced that there was indeed a wolf under the bed. And it's been almost 30 years since I was lying in that bed at that time, and I still remember the feeling of fear that I had because there was a wolf under the bed. And here's what fear causes us to do. It causes us to base our decisions outside of reality. Because oftentimes it's false evidence that appears real. And when you believe that evidence, you begin to live your life in such a way that it's consistent with that belief, whether that belief is true or not. It's false evidence, but it appears real. Fear really has the power over us to kind of be like this self-fulfilling prophecy. I'm going to ask you to date yourself here for just a moment. How many of you recall anything called the toilet paper panic of 1973? Does anybody remember that? We've had one person who remembers that in both services. Well, apparently, I read this past week, back in 1973, the government had a shortage of supply of toilet paper. And so Johnny Carson, he picked up on this in one of his nightly monologues that he did. And he communicated to the whole nation, like on December 19th, 1973, that because of the oil crisis that exists, we now no longer have any toilet paper. There's a shortage of toilet paper, whatever. The very next day, some 20 million viewers who watched Johnny Carson went out and cleared the supermarkets, cleared the aisles of all toilet paper. And what happened is that the people's fear became what? It became reality. Their fear was kind of this self-fulfilling prophecy. And what I would want us to understand as we begin is that whatever fears you may have, those will tend to become a self-fulfilling prophecy. Has anybody ever dated somebody that it's like the whole time you were dating them, they were like, oh gosh, I hope they don't break up with me. I hope they don't, you know. It's like, what does that make you want to do? Like, break up with them, you know? It's like this self-fulfilling thing when, you know, fear creates its own kind of reality. But here's the biggest thing that fear does, and this is what I'd really kind of like to ask you to zero in and consider. If you picture your life every day you wake up, you can move in one of two directions. In one direction, you can move into what you already know. You can move into sort of what we would call your comfort zone. It's where you've already experienced things. It's sort of the life of the mundane. It's the safe life. It's the risk-free life. Or you could move into what the Bible talks about kind of being a promised land. You can move into this different realm where God has different things in store for you, new things in store for you. It's a path of growth. It's a realm of growth. Every day when you wake up, you're going to move in one of two directions. And it can happen in your relationships, it can happen in your job, your vocation, your career, it can happen if you're a student in your education. Across the board, you can move into one of these two realms. And if you're governed by fear, here's what's going to happen. You're going to spend your life waking up every day moving into the realm of the known, moving into the realm of what is safe, what's convenient, what's comfortable. And by default, you're going to miss out on what God may have in store for you. And for some of you who kind of come from, maybe you're not a church background and the whole language of wilderness and promised land is a little bit hokey, I understand that. That's okay. But just work with me here. We picture these two realms as being what the scriptures will talk about in a moment, the realm of this wilderness, but then there's also this realm of the promised land. So if right now you're being governed by fear, the question becomes, how do you transition out of being governed by fear? Living in the wilderness, living in what is known, what's comfortable, transitioning out of that and moving into what God has in store for you, the land of promise. That's the question that we ask this morning. We begin looking at the answer, if you'll turn with me, to Numbers chapter 13. In Numbers chapter 13, we're going to talk about how we transition away from being governed by fear. In Numbers chapter 13, we begin here in verse 25. And up until this point in the history of the people that we're going to read about here, God had basically created a nation of people. He called them out of Egypt, if you're familiar with some of the background of the scriptures. Used a guy named Moses to call the people out. He was a deliverer. They escaped Egyptian captivity, and they've been wandering in this area called the wilderness for some time now. But when we meet them here in verse 25 of Numbers 13, they're right on the cusp, or kind of right on the verge of moving into the promised land. Moving out of the wilderness and into the promised land. But we're going to see here the way that they respond. In verses 1 and 2 of Numbers 13, Moses, the leader, had commissioned 12 spies, one for every leader of the tribes, to go out and check out the land, to spy out the land, to move into the promised land and give a report of it. When we enter in verse 25, here's the report that they bring back. In verse 25, it says, when they returned, they being the 12 spies who were sent out into the promised land, away from the wilderness. When they returned from spying out the land at the end of 40 days, they proceeded to come to Moses and Aaron and to all the congregation of the sons of Israel in the, can you say this with me, in the wilderness. Okay, I'll talk a lot faster, we'll be done faster if you'll talk back to me, okay? In the where? Wilderness. You guys are awesome. Y'all are ready. In the wilderness of Paran at Kadesh. And they brought back word to them and to all the congregation and showed them the fruit of the land. Thus they told them and said, we went into the land where you sent us, and it certainly does flow with milk and honey, and this is its fruit. So here's the picture. There was a group of people. They were kind of, okay, are we going to stay in the wilderness or are we going to move into the promised land? There were the 12 spies who were sent into the promised land. They looked at it. They checked it out. They came back to Moses and to Aaron and said, it's incredible. It's awesome. God really does have this place in store for us. But that's not where the story ends. In verse 28, notice where there is a shift that takes place here. Verse 28, nevertheless. All right. Anytime we hear, nevertheless, but, oh no, get ready, it's not good after this. Nevertheless, the people who live in the land are strong, and the cities are fortified and very large, and moreover, we saw the descendants of Anak there. And they go on and they talk about how the land it devours its inhabitants. And here's what happens here. There were 10 who went in, who came back and said, yeah, it's plentiful, it's bountiful. God does have a greater thing in store for us, but we can't do it, and here's why. They begin to list the reasons and excuses. All right, Joshua pushes back. Caleb pushes back, the two men who believed that they could do it. And in verse 30, they begin to say, yeah, we can do it, we can do it. But there's this back and forth that exists between the 10 who said it cannot and the 2 who say it can be done. You follow with me so far in the story? All right, if you move down to verse 33, you find that these people here, the 10, they were really intimidated and threatened and fearful of the sons of Anak. But if you had asked them what their problem was, they would have said, much like you and I tend to say, it's something outside or external to us. Explain what I mean. In verses 1 through 3 of chapter 14, basically the people, the 10, who say it can't be done, they begin listing excuses. They list reasons. It's the hill country, it's the fortified cities, it's the giants, it's our leadership that we've been given, it's, you know, our God is leading us down this path. They list all these reasons why they cannot do what God has told them to do. why they have to stay in the wilderness, why they cannot move into the promised land. And I'll just say that to say this. For every person who sits here today, I firmly believe in my heart that we can spend our time in the wilderness or we can move into the promised land. But every person here, you can make excuses as to why you have to stay right where you are in life. Why you cannot live this life of faith, why you have to be governed by fear. We can make the same excuses that they make. If you go down to verse 6 of Numbers chapter 14, we begin to get a glimpse into what the underlying problem is that these 10 have. In Numbers 14, verse 6, it says, Joshua the son of Nun and Caleb the son of Jephunneh, of those who spied out the land, they tore their clothes because of the report of the 10, saying, you know, it can't be done. They tore their clothes. In verse 7, they spoke to all the congregation of the sons of Israel, saying, the land which we passed through to spy out is an exceedingly good land. If the Lord is pleased with us, and this word pleased can also be translated, it's kind of interesting, as if he enjoys us or if he smiles upon us. It's this idea of God's favor being displayed toward the people. If the Lord is pleased with us, then he will bring us into this land and give it to us, a land which flows with milk and honey. And get this in verse 9. This is kind of the root issue that they struggled with, but yet they didn't even realize. They didn't realize. Joshua says to them in verse 9, only do not rebel against the Lord, and do not, say this with me, do not fear. Do not fear the people of the land. Why? For they will be our prey. And listen to this, it gets even better. Their protection has been removed from them, and the Lord is with us. Do not fear them. I find it interesting here that the people were somewhat naive. They didn't have the self-awareness to understand that really the root issue they had was their fear. And they veiled that, they disguised that with lots of excuses. Oh, the enemy's too big, the enemy's too strong, the country is too well protected. You know, they had lots of excuses, but Joshua drills down and he reveals for them what their root issue is. It's simply fear. And so opposed to the fear, Joshua says, I'm confident of this. God is with us. God is with us. And I find it interesting here that Joshua does not try to make light of the enemies. He doesn't say they're small, they're little, they're insignificant. All Joshua does here is he points out the strength of God, the presence of God. And when the strength and presence of God is with you, the size of the enemy, that maybe just the perception of the enemy, the obstacle, the thing that you have to overcome, will by default diminish. And so we see this unveiling story here. And it kind of reminds me of, I don't know if you've ever heard of or seen an African impala. An African impala is an animal that I'm told it can jump over 10 feet tall. It can clear a length or a distance of some 30 feet. But yet this animal that can jump over things that are 10 feet tall can be kept inside of an enclosure that's only 3 foot tall. How is that? They won't jump over anything that they can't see the other side of. And see, this is the story of the people here. There was something better in store for them. There was something that God had laid out. There was a promised land, but yet the people weren't willing to jump because they couldn't see how they were going to land. And folks, the same thing is true for all of us. God has something better in store, but sometimes it requires us to jump, even when we're not 100% sure where it is that we're going to land. And we, in our flesh, we kind of want to tend to back away and say, oh, I just don't know. We make excuses and we spiritualize things and, you know, I haven't prayed about enough or whatever. I don't know what the excuses would be. But we just tend to live these reserved lives. And the scriptures, I think, would help us to understand this, that God really, that I can recall or I'm aware of, he's never blessed a life of fear. You understand that? I mean, a life that has been governed by fear and kind of lived in the wilderness, God just hasn't blessed that. His favor hasn't shown, which raises the question, okay, what kind of life does he bless? If you fast forward in this story, some 40 years to Joshua chapter 14, we get a picture of the kind of life that God does bless. We've seen here what happens when our lives are governed with fear, And again, you can apply this to any situation in your life. You can apply it to your marriage, your days as a single person, your career, whatever. If you're governed by fear, you're not going to grow, you're not going to change, you're not going to move into what God has in store for you. Every realm of life, this is relevant. But here we see kind of the end of the story in Joshua chapter 14, verse 12. This is Caleb speaking. At this time, he's some 85 years old. The people have wandered in the wilderness. Some commentaries have said that as many as 1.2 million people have died by this point. The 1.2 million people who perished in the wilderness. If you look at the end of the story there in Numbers chapter 14, verses 22 and 23, the story ends with God saying to the people, "You're not going to inherit the land." And when we meet this same group of people here, 1.2 million of them had died. That's over 80 people per day had perished. But there were two people who remained, Joshua and Caleb. And in Joshua chapter 14, verse 12, here's what this 85-year-old man says. "Now then, give me this hill country about which the Lord spoke on that day. For you heard on that day that the Anakim were there, the sons of Anak, the people who caused dread and fear and trepidation. You hear that the sons of the Anakim, that they were there with great fortified cities. Perhaps the Lord will be with me and I will drive them out as the Lord has spoken." So here we've got this guy, Caleb, who 45 years later, he's an 85-year-old guy, who still believes in the same God. He still has the same promise rooted deeply in his heart, and he basically says, "Bring them on." You know, he's got this same rally cry that he had so many years ago. So what's going to happen to Caleb? Fast forward, Joshua chapter 15, go down to verse 13. It says, "Now Joshua gave to Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, a portion among the sons of Judah, according to the command of the Lord to Joshua, namely Kiriath Arba." Arba was the father of the Anak. It's basically the place where the Anakim, or the sons of Anak, dwelt, and the place from which they came. "Give me the place where the giants dwell. Okay, let me move into this place. Let me go right into where the enemies are." And I want you to see verse 14. "Caleb drove out from there the three sons of Anak." See what's happened in this story? There was a whole generation, there was a whole nation that perished because they said, "Okay, we have two paths in front of us. One is the path of familiarity. One is the path of the wilderness with what I know. It's what I know, living in my comfort zone. The other path is a path of a promised land." And the generation that perished was a generation that said, "We're going to be governed by fear." And they died in their fear. They died in their wilderness. But yet there was another generation, too, a remnant, Joshua and Caleb, who said, "No, we are not going to be governed by fear. We're going to be guided by faith." They moved into, even though it took them another 40 years, what God had promised. And the question that I want to come to you today and ask you is, which generation do you want to be a part of? Do you want to be a part of the generation that says, "We're going to shrink back and we're going to make excuses and we're going to say, here's why this can't be done and the enemies are too large"? Or do you want to be part of the generation that says, we're not going to be governed by fear. We are going to be guided by faith"? That's the contrast in this story here. And listen, that's the contrast of your life today. In every realm, you're going to be governed by fear or you're going to be guided by faith. And the thing that enabled Joshua and Caleb to be guided by faith was not themselves. It was not their leadership ability. It was the simple fact that they knew God was with them. Here's a statement I want to land on you, and you may need to think through this and process it because you may have a little struggle with it in the beginning, and I understand that. When it comes to God displaying His favor in your life, basically getting you out of where you are into the promised land, working on your behalf, Him extending His grace, all those things. When it comes to God's favor depends more on your faith than on your faithfulness. If you have one statement that you leave with today that you write down in your notes, I'd ask you to write this down. This is kind of the central truth, the central takeaway. God's favor depends more on your faith than on your faithfulness. And I can hear the sound objection coming back. Well, what about faithfulness? Isn't that important? Absolutely it is. The people of God have missed many blessings because of their unfaithfulness. You and I have missed many blessings because of our unfaithfulness. God wants faithfulness. He wants obedience. All of that is incredibly true. But when it comes to us receiving God's favor, kind of His supernatural working in our lives, it tends to be the case. If you look at this story here as well as, I believe, the Scriptures as a whole, His favor depends more on our faith than our faithfulness. Doesn't mean faithfulness is not important, but it does mean that our faith is paramount. If you think of it like this, if you move into the New Testament, Hebrews chapter 11, the writer there in verse 1, he defines faith for us. And then he goes through Hebrews chapter 11 and he says, without faith, it is impossible to please God. And he talks about different things that people did by faith. So he'll go through and say, by faith, Noah. By faith, Samson. By faith, all these different people did these incredible things. God worked on their behalf. God showed His favor to them by faith. And I find it interesting there in that passage that the writer does not say it was by faithfulness. Again, faithfulness is important. It's kind of a byproduct of our faith, but it was their faith that brought God's favor to bear and to work in their lives. Rahab the prostitute. You think about this. I mean, she was not like this model of faithfulness, was she? But yet the Scriptures commend her. Why? Because of her faith. Paul, as he wrote to the churches in the Galatian region in chapter 3 of his letter to the churches, he asked this kind of rhetorical question. He says, why is it that God has worked and done miracles among you? Why is it that basically He's shown His favor? Is it because you obeyed the law? Because you were faithful? Or was it because you believed what you heard because of your faith? And he's pointing out to them that it was their faith. They're simply believing what they had been heard that was sort of the conduit that God used to extend His favor into their lives. And the reason I point that out is because many of us will be tempted to think if we're here and we can move in one direction, which is the wilderness, but we don't want to go there, right? We want to stay away from that. We want to move in kind of the land where God has things in store for us. We want to see His hand at work. We want His favor. Many of us, if we're not careful, because kind of this moralistic gospel, will tend to believe that it's our faithfulness that opens the door to God working on our behalf. I understand faithfulness is important, but the key, the trigger, the foundation of God's favor extended into our lives and the thing that I believe catapults us from where we are into the place where God wants us to be is faith. And as a bedrock of that faith, faithfulness will come. James would tell us that without faith, without faith and works coming together, that faith is really dead. Those two will go hand in hand, but it's faith that is fundamental. So when you think about God moving and working in your life, don't think, okay, if I can just be faithful enough and if I can fill out the checklist, checklist Christianity where you've got your 8 things that you can do in the course of a week to make sure you were a good Christian that week, then somehow God's going to work. When we look at this story here, and I believe when we look at the Scriptures as a whole, God's favor depends more on your faith than your faithfulness. And so the translation for each one of you is, as you think about your life today, you can either be governed by fear. And if you're governed by fear, you're going to stay right where you've always been. Or you can back up, take a sober view of reality and say, no, I'm not going to be governed by fear anymore. I'm going to be guided by faith. One of the things that's been on my heart to share with you kind of collectively as a church, I want to say this as pretty quickly. But I mentioned kind of having a stronghold of fear. One of the things I want to share with you very clearly is that as God has me in this place that He has me right now, I believe the elders and the staff would join with me today and we would want to proclaim and commit to you that we will not and we do not want to be a church that is governed by fear. We want to be a church that is guided by faith. And that's going to mean at times because of our unfaithfulness, because we drop the ball, because we don't get things right, we're going to move into a realm and we're going to realize, okay, you know, that might not have been the best area to go. It might not have been the best thing to do. But by far, the path that we want to take, that we believe God is leading us on, is the path of faith. And let me just share with you just a couple of these things, identify them very briefly. Here are some things that I personally have kind of had fears with, and these are things that I know that many of you have had fears with as well. I'll just list them real quickly. One, what's going to happen if we build? In this big construction project, $1.3 million plus, we're not going to have any money in the bank, we're going to have to raise funds. What's going to happen if we build? Here's another fear. What's going to happen if we don't build a sanctuary right now? You know, it's been kind of a thing I know in the life and the heart of this body for a long time, and I've sensed that, I felt that. Here's another fear. What's going to happen if we branch out and start a new campus? We reproduce ourselves, we move out into a new area, into a new realm. What's going to happen there? And we could sit here today and we could make a long list of fears that are present. And I just want to come to you today and say, we are going to be a church that's guided by faith, not governed by fear. Because we believe that God's favor depends more on our faith than our faithfulness. And we're moving in trusting Him that He's bigger than any enemy out there on the horizon. He's bigger than anything, any obstacle, anything that could oppose us. And as long as we have the presence of God with us, we know that we're going to be okay. So just in terms of corporate application, there you go. In terms of your personal application, think about every realm of your life and try to identify the areas where you're somehow governed by fear. And men, I don't know how it is for you, but for me, fear is not necessarily an emotion. It's just sort of an attitude or a mindset. And women, it may be the same for you. It may be more of an emotional thing, I'm not sure. But identify those things and then turn to your Father in heaven. And I would just encourage you to pray this prayer. God, help me to be guided by faith, not governed by fear. Guided by faith, not governed by fear. And every day begin implementing that into kind of the ebb and flow of your walk with Him so that He can come alongside you with the help of His Spirit and get you out of this kind of fear-oriented way of living into a faith-oriented way of living where you're not assured of every outcome. You don't know exactly what's going to happen when you step into that realm, but you know this, that the favor of God is unleashed through faith, not so much your faithfulness. If we do this collectively, if you do this, you take this step where you're guided by faith, not governed by fear, a couple things I think can happen. First of all, you'll be able to begin to see the potential in your life, not just the problems. You'll be able to see the things that can happen. You'll be able to see the positive developments. You'll be able to see the potential, not just the problems. You know, when Jesus, the thing I love about Him is when He looked out upon a crowd of people in Matthew chapter 9 that Matthew describes as being harassed and helpless, like sheep without a shepherd. Do you know what Jesus said about them? Much the same as He would say about this crowd here today. The harvest is plentiful. Jesus, when He looked at what many people would perceive to be a problem, He saw potential. And when you begin to live with this kind of faith orientation, where you're going to be guided by faith, you know that God is with you, you're not going to be governed by fear, you can begin to see the good that's on the horizon. You can begin to see the new opportunity. You can begin to see the new challenge as a potential, not just a problem. But the second thing, and I think perhaps the most important thing that can happen in your life today and in the life of our church as a whole, is that we can begin to move into the land that God has in store for us. We can basically begin to move into the life that God has in store for us. There was a runner a number of years ago named Roger Bannister. He was a British medical student, and he was chasing a somewhat elusive goal. For over 100 years, this was back in 1944, for over 100 years prior to that, nobody had ever been able to break the four-minute mile. Basically, they hadn't been able to run an entire mile in under 4 minutes. And that's like a superhuman kind of feat. So for over 100 years, people, track and field folks, they said this was kind of like the holy grail of running. you know, to break the 4-minute mile. Doctors had even written in medical journals and in writings about why the human body could not run a mile in under less than 4 minutes. Well, May 1954, this British medical student, Roger Bannister, ran the mile in 3 minutes, 59 seconds, and some 4/100ths of a second. Finally, he was the first person to break the 4-minute mile. Over 100 years of history, 100 years of people trying, striving, working. Finally, one person broke it. You would think after that, you know, big applause and acclaim and the word spread around the world, you would think after that that, okay, maybe in another 10, 15, 20 years later, somebody else would break it. You know what happened the very next month? Somebody else broke it. And what happened over 300 times over the next 10 years? 300 more people broke it. Now, they didn't have Red Bull. They didn't have any kind of stoked up ways of training. There was one thing that changed. Their faith. People now began to believe that this can happen. This is possible. And so instead of looking at a situation and thinking, here are the reasons why I cannot run a mile in less than 4 minutes, now they began to look and say, here are the reasons I can. And I would say to you, it's always kind of been true that our actions will seldom outperform our expectations. And as you look into the future of your life, as we look into the future of our life as a body, we need to know that our actions are going to kind of flow from our expectations. When we are guided by faith, not governed by fear, we can now expect God to do incredible things in our midst. Because we know this, that He's been doing this for a long time. He's broken the barriers. He's broken anything that any of us would have to overcome. He's overcome any obstacle. If He can raise His Son, Jesus Christ, up from the dead, I think that He can handle any barrier that would stand between you and the things that God your Father has in store for you. So I'm just coming to you today and I'm asking you, would you begin to live a life that is guided by faith, not governed by fear? Would we collectively as a body just stand up and kind of shake off the fear? And so we are not going to be a body that's governed by faith. We're going to be guided, governed by fear. We're going to be guided by faith. Let's pray.